No Longer Neighbors is proud to support the United Negro College Fund, the nation's largest and most effective minority education organization. Your donations help educate over 60,000 students at more than 1,100 schools. Learn how the fund gets results at uncf.org.
Yeah, No Longer Neighbors, hosted by Chris and Aaron. Used to live next door, Dallas, Texas, representing. But then Aaron moved away. Yeah, that's the situation. So join the podcast, get in on the conversation. Yeah, yeah, authentic, real friends, I admit it. Still keeping the connection, it don't matter about the distance. You don't have to wait up, I'ma tell you straight up. Entertaining for sure, this is No Longer Neighbors, yeah.
Well, we decided to come back and do it again. Aaron didn't kick me out. This is his baby, by the way. So, you know, you can get rid of me anytime you want and find another guy you used to live next to.
It's always smart when you're starting a podcast to find someone who's better at podcasting than you. So that was my bright idea. And I think so far it's worked out well.
In a couple of minutes, we'll share our conversation with Tim Scarborough, basketball analyst for Stadium and ESPN. He's actually going back to work next week. He'll be on the broadcast for the basketball tournament, TBT, on ESPN. Everybody in a bubble in Columbus, Ohio. It's teams made up of former college players, alumni squads, with prize money of $1 million up for grabs for the champions. But we want to start off just talking about Aaron's particular field of expertise, and that's technology. That's the field that he works in. And I just want you to give me broad strokes a little bit about what you've seen during this time of the pandemic, where technology has really changed people's lives, maybe just changed your life personally.
The first thing that jumps out to me, Chris, is that before the pandemic, if you asked people how often or how regularly they do video chatting, I think majority of them might say 1 to 2 times a week via FaceTime with grandparents. And that was pretty much the extent of it. You might do it on occasion for business. If you're somebody who works from home, you might have another purpose. But video chatting, whether it be Zoom, which got a lot of publicity up front, or any of the other services, overnight doubled, tripled, quadrupled. You were hearing numbers like 300% growth in March from a lot of these companies. And that's how we conducted our lives. So you had Zoom meetings for work if you were fortunate enough to be employed. You had similar meetings, maybe just to see your family and friends. I know our family started a weekly 7 p.m. Zoom meeting where everybody could jump on just to see each other. And I think that's really common. The other thing you were seeing is churches and organizations that all of a sudden could not meet in person, but they had a desire to still see each other. And we all know that video is so much more effective than just audio. A picture's worth 1,000 words, so how many, you know, words is a video worth? And so we conducted our lives via video conference, I think for at least the first couple months. I do feel like now that we've all settled into it, maybe some of the newness has dropped off a little bit, and maybe we're not on video for everything, but I feel like that is going to stick. And I've heard from many of the organizations, oddly enough, that have started to use Zoom and other platforms like it, that attendance for whatever it is, a church service or an organization meeting, is actually up. They're getting more people via video than they were in person because there's less barrier to entry. You don't have to drive somewhere. You don't necessarily have to get fully dressed. So that is something that I think will stay with us for a long time.
If we did have, just like you had, family game nights on Zoom for the first few weeks of being shut in, and that was great fun. And it was actually something where we hadn't visited with those members of our family on a regular basis for a while, but this was the opportunity. You know, let's all get together. We don't have anything going on. Let's do this once a week. And that was great. The oddest use of Zoom that I've had, my grandfather died at the age of 100, and we had his funeral via Zoom. So I had to give a eulogy on Zoom. I mean, this is a guy that was born in 1920, and who would have thought 100 years later that his funeral would be done via video conferencing?
It's truly changed just about every aspect of our life. We've also seen the generation that is possibly most affected by COVID, which would be those over 65, which maybe were not as comfortable with all kinds of technology coming into this, be forced to use it like they never have before. So one example I'll give you of that is, since this all began, many of us were very hesitant to go to the grocery store. I think you mentioned that you haven't been out to the store much. And so services like Instacart and Shipt that bring groceries, Amazon Prime or Now, right, that bring things to your door, are things that people who never before, like my parents, would have ever thought about using were kind of thrust into at a moment's notice. And what you saw is that it took some time for those services to be able to react. During March and April, if you went to place a grocery order, sometimes your week was 5 to 7 days to get that order. Where prior to COVID, and now that things have kind of evened out and opened up a bit, your wait's more like 2 hours. So we've seen businesses have to adjust because the technology was there to enable them, but the back-end infrastructure and the people weren't there ready to support. But now that that's kind of been there and laid the groundwork, I think we'll see massive growth because you have a whole nother segment of the population, let's say 65 and over, that is now comfortable with these services. And they might just think, even when COVID's over, it's a whole lot easier to send somebody half your age, you know, to go do your grocery shopping.
Well, I've always liked it just because of the time reason. I mean, I get, you know, don't have to spend an hour finding things at the grocery store, click it all in, get it delivered to my door. And I wasn't doing it every time before COVID-19, but I was doing it on occasion. And yeah, I can absolutely see it going forward. And I even turned to now a new app that I thankfully discovered, Drizzly, that delivers alcohol to your door. So don't even have to run down to the liquor store anymore.
Yeah, I think there's an app for everything. But COVID-19 and our kind of virtual world has made people think of even new and different ways to use technology. And so I ask everybody in every field, do you think there's going to be a long-term impact to COVID in your field when I talk to them? I think we asked that to Bob, right, about mm-hmm. sports. And I think technology, the long-term impact is really that, like I just mentioned, we've broadened the user base, so the number of users, but we've also found out there's new use cases or we can do the things differently. So before, there were services and stores that were absolutely closed off to using technology to online shopping and pickup. Now even mom and pops are doing that because, like in Texas for a while, the only way you could be open was if you were offering pickup. And so I think that's what we're going to see is kind of a change in how the public shops, because there are some great things about being able to accomplish what you want to accomplish virtually.
Well, in sports broadcasting, the biggest difference is going to be a lot more remote calls. You're going to be doing broadcasts from a studio as opposed to traveling to the stadium. So that's going to be something that I experience and that Tim Scarborough is going to have to deal with a lot going forward. And really appreciate Tim hopping on next week. He'll be calling the basketball tournament on ESPN. Tim and I were set to call the Conference USA basketball quarterfinals together on March 12th, but that morning, one by one, every single college basketball tournament was canceled, and we were left without any games to do. Tim, first of all, we're going to get into the basketball tournament later, which you got coming up soon, but what's your confidence level about having college sports this coming year?
Man, I tell you, Chris, I'm not confident about any of it, to be honest. You know, I still have my fingers crossed that we're going to be able to do TBT next week. When you look at the numbers going around the country, you know, there's many states that are still trending upward. So not only have they not flattened the curve or even on the downtrend, there's many that are trending upward. And I don't really know how you social distance trying to play sports. Now, obviously, with the college football, they're talking about maybe half-filled stadiums and things like that, but that's still a whole lot of people, you know, going in one spot. So, you know, unless we start doing something different in terms of mass testing, I don't really see us being able to pull off the football season. But the good thing for us, guys like you and me, I know you probably do football too. I just do basketball. You know, football can be kind of that incubator where, you know, if they can pull that off, maybe we could have a college basketball season. So
yeah.
Fingers crossed, but, you know, there's a lot of unknowns here.
Yeah, Tim, you and I actually have a connection, and our audience will know that in the first episode, we interviewed Bob Sturm, who was a Liberty graduate. Well, yeah. I'm also a Liberty graduate, and I come to find out that you're a Liberty graduate. So
I am, and not only that, I went to school with Bob Sturm.
Wow.
There we go. Small world.
It's a small world. Our podcast listeners are going to think this is rigged because we're just having all Liberty guests. It's not always going to be that way. But I wanted to know, you know, sports broadcasting is a really competitive field. I grew up in Connecticut, really close to ESPN in my high school years, and so many kids wanted to go on and work in sports. How did you kind of get that break from playing? I think you played at Liberty to going on and actually broadcasting.
Yeah, that's an interesting story, really, because, you know, when I got to Liberty, I wanted to get into broadcasting because, you know, this is a long time ago, but we used to play Nintendo basketball and football games and baseball games and with my friends, and I would kind of announce the games, and they all thought it was good, right? And I thought it was okay, but, you know, I really wasn't a play-by-play guy, and I kind of knew that. But what I figured I could do to get into the business is be a former player and the former coach. So after a few years, I was in corporate America after college. Then I decided to go back to Liberty and be an assistant coach. So I was an assistant coach for a few years in Lynchburg at Liberty. And then even during that time as an assistant coach, I was already getting on the radio with our radio guy for the women's basketball games. So I was getting reps and I was, you know, building my reputation as a former Division I player and now a former Division I coach. So pretty much after that, I moved back to Northern Virginia and really just started volunteering my time on a small cable channel at Grant Hill's old high school, South Lakes High School in Reston, Virginia. They showed all their football and basketball games on Friday nights. I started calling those games. So it's a funny story. When I first started, my very first time in front of a camera was a train wreck. So I never played football because my school didn't have football. I didn't play. I've never really done play-by-play other than on Nintendo, right? And I never worked by myself. Well, tick all three of those boxes because I did all three of those things in my first time on the air. I was by myself doing a sport I didn't know and sitting in the wrong chair. So it was crazy.
You're back to work next week on ESPN with TBT, the basketball tournament. Now, this is a great concept. It's college alumni teams, $1 million in prize money for the champion. Usually it's something that we get after the NBA season is over, but this time it comes before the NBA starts back up, and you're going to have the basketball world's attention, but it's going to be an odd experience for everybody involved.
We're going to have everybody's attention, not just, you know, even the casual viewer, and that's the opportunity that I feel like baseball missed by delaying coming back. TBT is going to be really the first live team broadcast since March when everything closed down. So for us to be able to do this and be the first back into it, so to speak, it's a real great opportunity for me personally as a broadcaster. When you think about it, I'm going to be one of two or three guys in the whole country as an analyst that's going to be on national TV next weekend calling real live basketball games. So it's a great opportunity for TBT to get way more exposure. Normally, a lot of these early round games are on E3 or E+, but because ESPN and E2 doesn't really have any programming right now, other than the cornhole championships that they've been showing every weekend, my good friend Jeff McCarriger is actually calling those. You know, this is a real opportunity for TBT to kind of get exposed to the entire world. The whole entire sports world is going to be watching this week, next weekend.
And it gives guys every reason, because of that exposure, because of the money on the line, to absolutely 1,000% follow the rules in the bubble. Because if guys, if there's a breakout, then yeah, this all thing could be a wash.
And unfortunately, we've already lost one team. So TBT was smart enough to have a couple of bubble teams, so to speak, that are on call just in case. So what they're doing is they're sending all 24 teams that made it. Of course, it's normally a 64-team tournament, but this year it's 24 with COVID, and they're doing it all in one place, obviously, where normally they do it in different regions, and then for the 16 and the 8, they go to different places. You know, the final 8 really is played all in one city. But this year they're doing everything in Columbus, a truncated tournament, but they also have a couple of alternate teams. They are going to quarantine all 26 of those teams, and we lost the West Virginia team called Best Virginia. Lost them because they had one guy test positive for COVID. And that is why I have my fingers crossed that this thing is even going to take place next weekend, because you start hemorrhaging teams. All it takes is one person on a 12-man roster, including the coaches and any other GMs, people that are ancillary. If any of them affiliated with you get COVID, your whole team's done. So, again, we've already lost one. The Jimmy V Foundation team is going to replace that team. But again, you know, fingers crossed, we're about eight, nine days away from us tipping it off. But you know, I'm really hoping it happens, because this is a great opportunity for me personally.
Yeah. Speaking of the eyes of the world kind of being on the sports, the very few sports that are going on, right? We've seen NASCAR, we've seen a little bit of golf. The world has been really focused on stuff outside of sports. I mean, COVID has been the reason that we don't have sports, but that was preoccupying our attention kind of until a couple weeks ago when the stuff happened with George Floyd, right?
Right.
And one of the, you know, areas that's been on the news a lot is Atlanta, because before George Floyd, you had Ahmaud Arbery and you had racial unrest that was, you know, all over the United States. But Atlanta, you saw the mayor and Killer Mike yep. come out in their press conference. As yep. someone who's been in Atlanta during this time, and, you know, as an African-American, what is your view of everything going on been like, and what's it been like in Atlanta for you? And I just like to get a little bit more of your experience.
Well, you know, since COVID, I can be honest, I don't think I've been in any building, maybe two different buildings. I went to a doctor one time and I went to get a blood test one time. Other than that, I've kind of been in the house, in my driveway with my family, with my kids, my wife. And so I haven't really even been into the city. So we've kind of been insulated from that, which is a good thing. We're about 30, 40 minutes south of the city in the suburbs. But, you know, of course you see it on TV, and you know, there's good and bad things. And the unfortunate thing about it is in the acute moments where it got violent, sometimes the people who are, I'm not going to say they're pro-racism, but they're maybe anti-social justice, they tend to paint everyone with that broad brush. That's the only negative thing that's come from this, in my opinion. And when you think about it, there really hasn't been a lot of violence in the last couple of weeks. But yet, night after night after night, I am amazed at how much stamina these young people have. They have gone out there and protested and protested and protested. So I think this feels different. You know, I'm a little older than you guys. I've lived through a few things over the years, but this one seems a little different. I think there's going to be some positive change because more people, not just Black people, are starting to see some of the inequities in our justice system.
And as you look for change, as we look for positive change, there has been a group of NBA players who were definitely letting their voices be heard on maybe this isn't the right time to restart the NBA. Maybe we should not shift the focus away from those who are trying to enact that social change, and maybe this would take away from the Black Lives Matter movement. Where do you sit on that? On is it better to have sports going on, to have that platform to raise the voices in that way, or should we potentially not be playing sports in the meantime?
Well, I think my take on it is that we could do both. And when you think about, again, not a lot of things are happening in the sports world, this is actually a good opportunity for guys like Kyrie Irving and some of the other ones, professional athletes who we haven't heard a lot from, but now we're starting to hear from. And Kyrie's one of the ones kind of leading the charge for not playing, but continuing to focus on the social justice issues. I think you can do both, and I really think coming back and playing, there's a lot of little things you could do. Of course, Colin Kaepernick had his own peaceful protest four or five years ago, and that didn't get met well by much of mainstream America. But as far as I'm concerned, I thought Colin Kaepernick did the right thing. Because again, if you look back at that, Chris, he didn't even say anything about it until he was asked about it. It was his own private, peaceful demonstration in his own thing. And then it kind of just blew up into something. And remember, he was sitting down, which kind of was disrespectful. And so he started taking a knee because that showed a little bit more respect. But at the same time, he was allowed to protest in his own way. And I asked the people at the time who were out against it, if you can't protest this way, how should you protest? I mean, this is as peaceful and as docile as you're ever going to have a protest. And, you know, people tried to change the narrative, as they always do. They try to make it about the flag and veterans. I think this time is different than all that because there isn't as much backlash or protest. In fact, it's being welcomed by a great deal more people than before. So to me, I think they should go play, and I think they should also use their voices, you know, in the post-game press conference.
A few years ago, there was a lot of backlash for Colin Kaepernick, as you stated.
Right.
And when we talked to Bob in episode one, we talked about sports team names and how that has come up as a discussion, right? Are certain sports names appropriate? Are they racially insensitive and things like that? And Chris and I discussed how our attitudes have kind of evolved and changed over the past few years about maybe we should look at some of these things. And maybe in the past we would have dismissed, you know, things that were insensitive. Right. What do you think is really causing that change? Why do you think that now in 2020 people are starting to maybe see the light and shift perceptions a little bit more in sports and in general?
I think, well, you know, from a Black person's standpoint, I think there's so much, there used to be so much pushback on the fact that there were inequities. There are a lot of people who say there is no more racism. There's still a lot of people who say that. But, you know, more and more people are starting to realize, and they saw what happened to George Floyd, and it was so vivid and made such an indelible impression on not just Black people, but really everybody with a heartbeat at this point. I mean, you couldn't watch that and not say, wow, that was just incredible. But what we know in the Black community is that those kind of things happen far more frequently than mainstream America would ever care to admit or even care about. But now people are starting to care about that. So I would say with that change of attitude, the people who are pushing this social justice have decided, hey, we can have what we call in project management, a little scope creep. This is the project scope. But hey, we can extend it to here, to here, to here. And now you're starting to see, you know, and there's a lot of racist imagery in our everyday world that we've just become numb to. I mean, Aunt Jemima, I mean, it can't get more racist than that. But that image lasted 150 years. Uncle Ben, and then again, all of those are starting to change as a result. But to answer your question about the sports teams, you know, probably about 5 or 6 years ago was when my radar kind of, my antenna kind of went off with the Redskins in particular. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and I was really kind of upset with Dan Snyder for not even wanting to consider a discussion about changing the Redskin name. And, you know, they have opportunities. And, of course, we have many high schools. And, you know, again, living in D.C., we had Lee Highway, which, of course, was General Lee's, the Confederate general's, named after him. You have Lee Public Schools. You know, I think all those things, we need to get away from all that imagery. People say it's rewriting history. To me, honoring those people is rewriting the history because they lost the war. They fought a war for slavery, for pro-slavery. I mean, that is just amazing to me. But yet we want to honor these people with statues. So it's long overdue, and I'm glad they're coming down. Now, I don't think they should just go out and rip them down like they have been, but I think there should be some kind of legislation, and then the cities and the states who are involved should one by one start kind of rolling those things back. There's plenty of other honorable Americans post 1865. That's a long time ago. There's a lot of both black, white, Native American, any people that have done something positive that we can honor. So I'm glad that things are happening.
Tim, great conversation. And I hope that next time we're assigned to do a game together that it actually happens. And I hope that you do have the basketball tournament to call next week. Hopefully no hiccups there. And we see you on ESPN starting on 4th of July.
Fingers crossed, man. Fingers crossed. But thanks for having me, Chris and Aaron. You guys do a great job. I appreciate you inviting me on.
We told you last week that we're going to end every show with a What We're Into segment. Something that Chris or I want to share with the audience and talk a little bit more about our lives and what we're into. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about food and how COVID has kind of affected or impacted our food choices. So, you know, during COVID, even going to the grocery store, at least early on in March and April, became a chore. People were putting on their PPE, and what used to be simple became kind of an adventure. So Chris, I wanted to see, what was your attitude towards food and your approach coming into the beginning of this time where we're all being quarantined and knowing you were probably not going out as much? And how has it kind of developed after 3 months or so of being inside primarily?
Well, first of all, I haven't been inside a grocery store since mid-March. I've switched completely to either Amazon delivery or Walmart pickup. So avoiding that altogether, avoiding the grocery store altogether. Still getting everything we need, but just one less way to stay around people. Coming into all this, when we thought it was going to, you know, be a little while and it was obvious that we were all going to be isolating for a good amount of time, I took the attitude of, I'm going to come out of this healthier than I've ever been. I'm going to take this completely seriously. There's, you know, I'm on the road so much for my job that eating sometimes gets out of hand, and it's a lot of fast food. It's a lot of eating out and going for drinks with people after a game. But in this case, like, there's none of that. I have no excuses. I can eat, you know, a lean and green meal every single time and really get control of exactly how what I want to weigh and improve my appearance at the same time. So that was going really well. And I lost probably about 10 pounds. And then, you know, and we're going to get into an episode later on where we really go in depth. Last month, so mid-May, my wife and I were expecting a daughter, Grace, in September. And she was stillborn at 21 weeks. So after that, I mean, it's just been comfort food. It's been a lot of meal train deliveries, and you know, people are making us really good stuff, in a lot of cases, fattening stuff. A lot of DoorDash gift cards have been sent our way. And we have not really cared all that much about being healthy. It's just, you know, getting a meal in our stomach. And recently, over the last couple of weeks, I have started to go back on the eating healthier kick. And I hope to be in decent enough shape and playing weight by the time football season comes back. But, you know, it's one of those things you don't really care that much about that aspect of what we're going through. But it definitely did take a toll on my attempt to be healthy during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think similarly, our, you know, attitude towards food kind of evolved, right? So we were, before this, heavily into eating out and getting pickup with two young kids, as I have in the house. There seems to be less and less time for cooking in our busy lives, or there was, right? And everything came to a screeching halt when we all got kind of quarantined. Mm-hmm. And we made the decision really early on that we weren't going to eat any food or drink outside of the house for a while. And so for a solid 8 weeks, we didn't have 1 ounce of food that wasn't prepared in our house, either of us, which was Yeah, life-changing to say the least. I mean, after probably cooking at home once or twice a week, now we're cooking at home three meals a day every single day for weeks on end. And so I tried to make myself excited about cooking by buying new cooking stuff, right? Accessories. I'm like, if we're going to cook, it's going to be good. And so, you know, I bought some new stainless steel pots and pans and, you know, upgraded our toaster oven to one that does air frying and some other things.
I got new pots and pans last Christmas. Talk about that is a game changer. I highly, highly recommend it. If you have some old, terrible pots and pans that take a lot of, like, I didn't want to make anything because it took so long to scrub it out and I have to take that little grime food, sometimes your fingernails, to get it loose. And now it just flies right off. So easy. And yeah, same way. I've been cooking so much more just since Christmas because of the pots and pans.
Yeah. I hate to say cookware, you know, is exciting topic for our audience, but I feel like, you know, we've been going through this common experience where people have been cooking more. If you look on social media, I think more than ever before, you see both men and women talking about new recipes and things they've discovered. Mm-hmm. And there's these Facebook groups about quarantine meals. I'm not sure if you've seen that one.
No.
A contest to see who can post the best picture of their quarantine meal. So
now I've made some good ones. I've been doing meat more in the oven and on the skillet.
Yeah.
You know, so that's been really good. I have a new grill that I haven't put together yet, but just because I don't really need to right now. I'm doing so well with that. But you know, you have decided to go kind of this extra step and, you know, get an extra punch in your man card, I guess you could say, by upgrading to smoking meat. You know, you can really get down and grunt like a real man when you can do stuff like what you're doing right now.
Yeah, I definitely think you went the right approach there, talking about the Texas man card. So I've lived in Texas for, I guess we're going on about 13, 14 years now. I need to look at the calendar. But I feel like there's steps of Texas man card, right? So step number one was cowboy boots. And it took me a while to kind of work those in. But I'm now very
step number one is making sure that you put Texas above all else. You have to understand that Texas is the greatest state in the nation, and you all other states pale in comparison.
Well, true that. Yeah, I miss Texas history growing up in Connecticut. It's a shocker, right? but yes, the cowboy boots was number one. I don't know if I skipped a step to number three, but I did own a pickup truck for a very short amount of time. And that's a story we'll tell probably in another podcast when we get into my obsession with trading cars, which is, let me just tell you, a very unhealthy obsession. So somewhere in the middle of the pickup truck and the cowboy boots is learning to make real barbecue, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say grilling takes place at probably every state in the country and probably anywhere in the world, but smoking meat, at least in a specific style, is, as you know, kind of a regional thing in the United States, right? So barbecue has its kind of regional personalities where you talk about Carolina style barbecue, which is typically pulled pork. You talk about Memphis barbecue, which is, you know, typically ribs, usually dry rub, Kansas City, burnt ends, and then Texas. We kind of have a smattering of everything, but beef is usually the focus, right? So you think of brisket when you think of Texas. The problem is, being as not healthy as I am and not skinny as I am, I enjoy all of the regional cuisine.
Oh, me too.
When it comes to barbecue, right? I'm, even though I live in Texas and I probably do like brisket the best, I will say that, I'll eat them all. I'll eat pork, I'll eat beef, I'll eat chicken. And so I decided it was time, while we're stuck at home, to follow in the footsteps of my great Texas brethren and learn how to smoke meat. The problem is, I've always wanted to do this, but there's been one thing stopping me, which is that typically smoking meat takes a lot of effort. And there's some knowledge that goes with it, right? And so it's just been easier for me to drive 5 minutes up the road to one of my favorite barbecue places here in McKinney called Hutchins and get some great barbecue and not worry about making it myself at home.
Sure.
But since that was no longer an option, or at least it wasn't an option for us because we were trying to eat inside the house, I decided that I was going to do this. But when I started doing some research, I found out now in the modern ages, 2020, there's other ways to make barbecue. So typically before, you would make barbecue on a smoker called an offset smoker, or some people call it a stick burner, right? And this is a kind of a grill contraption with a sidecar on it. And you have, you know, wood and coal, and it's a really intense thing. And the thing is, with an offset smoker, you have to pay attention to the fire constantly for hours on end. And that's how you make the best barbecue. Now, there's some guys that have figured out that there are other ways. And so you might have heard of a Big Green Egg. Are you familiar with that, Chris?
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, I considered getting one when I got my latest grill that I still have not put together.
So there's the Big Green Egg, right? And it's an amazing machine. Normally these grills can also smoke because they're so good at holding heat, but they also have a learning curve and they also take a lot of time and effort, and not to mention they're a bit expensive, right? So I went to the newest category, which I've found out since then is growing like leaps and bounds. And about 30 years ago, a company called Traeger, you might have heard of them, founded a company, and they made these things called pellet grills.
Mm-hmm.
And what a pellet grill is, I think the name's a little bit deceiving. It's more of a pellet smoker, really, is what it is. It can do grilling, but it uses indirect heat. So instead of having to go chop down some wood like a real man, right? So maybe I'm losing a notch in the man card there. You buy some wood pellets at the grocery store. Or at Lowe's, right? And it's little tiny pieces of wood that are in pellet form, and you just throw them into your smoker, and voila, you have wood flavoring, that wonderful aroma, right? But you can make Texas-style barbecue. You can make Carolina-style barbecue. You can make all the barbecue with a pellet smoker. The difference is here between a pellet grill and your traditional kind of smoker, and even a Big Green Egg. Chris, do you know what the difference is?
I don't.
So the pellet grill has a plug. And now some guys are going to tell you that's cheating. But the reason why having a plug to your grill and plugging it into electricity is so awesome is that it allows you to control the temperature without a lot of manual interaction, right? So the number one thing
that does sound like cheating.
Yeah. it is to an extent. It's good for somebody who wants to take a lazy approach to their smoking, like myself. It allows you to, just like an oven, set the temperature, right? So if you need to put a brisket on for 10 hours at 225, you can set it and forget it, as they say, right? You load those pellets in there and you do it. And so what I'll tell you is that this thing, this contraption, has been an absolute game changer in my family, because within the first 2 days I was using it, I was cooking prime rib, chicken wings. I was cooking brisket within the first couple of weeks. I was cooking ribs shortly thereafter, and I have been able to make barbecue. I won't say, you know, it's gonna win any awards, but it is as good as most barbecue places you'll just randomly walk into with very little effort and very low cost. So the pellet grill has been transformational, and I've now become a pellet grill evangelist. I'm like literally walking up. Well, I can't walk up to anybody because we're not going anywhere. But I'm telling everybody that I know, if you don't have one of these, you should get one of these. It'll change your life.
So now we need to find the best pellet griller in the country and invite him on the show. That's the next step in the podcast, right?
Absolutely. That'll be a good future down the line episode.
Aaron's quick pick. Something when you first said it, I was like, well, I have one of these. So what is it and why is the one that you found so special?
Yeah. So first I want to say, if you don't have a digital food thermometer, you should get one, right? So a digital food thermometer as opposed to an analog one will give you really quick readings. And there are people out there who are professional cooks that tell you they can look at a steak and tell you if it's done, right? Or they can touch it and if it feels like the palm of your hand, it's a certain doneness, whatever. For most people, for the average person, cooking to temperature on most things is far more accurate and far more important than cooking to time or feeling, right? So once you realize that and get that through your head, that if you have a good digital thermometer, it's really hard to mess things up, your cooking will change. It changed me. Like, no more overdone steaks, no more overdone chicken. So first of all, good digital thermometer. And I think that anyone can buy them for, you know, $10 on Amazon, right? But if you want to take it to the next level, mixing this with technology, right, which is my background, there are some wireless digital thermometers that came on the market within the last couple of years. The one I have is called Meter, M-E-A-T-E-R. So it's kind of a play on words, but it will allow you to monitor what's cooking from your phone. So it's a probe, a thermometer that has no wires, and then you can fire up an app on your phone and see what temperature your meat is at. But it has some intelligence behind it too. So you can tell it you're cooking a steak and it'll tell you what the recommended temperature is for that steak. You can set your doneness if you prefer things more well done or more medium, right? And the amazing thing is it'll even tell you if you're grilling something or you're cooking it in the oven, when it's time to pull it off. So it has a proper time to rest. Because anyone who's into cooking knows that resting your meat is one of the most important parts, and that your meat can usually come up 5 to 10 degrees, maybe an average of 7 degrees, while it's sitting there after it comes off the grill, right? So Meter makes all of this a seamless experience from your smartphone. So instead of having to sit there by the grill every 5 minutes and poke your piece of meat, you can sit inside your house in the nice air conditioning here in the Texas summer and monitor it from there.
Well, if I had the outdoor grill running right now, had it put together, I'd probably take your advice and pick up that particular piece of hardware. But for now, we're good. Episode 2 in the books, coming up next week on a holiday edition of No Longer Neighbors, 4th of July weekend. Coming up, we will visit with Kyle Draper, former youth pastor, now a social media coach. Some really good stuff coming up there. Also, Aaron's obsession with getting new cars. Please subscribe, tell your friends, follow us on social media. You can get those links on nolongerneighbors.com. We'll talk to you next week.